The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Wraith is a patrol ship. She's been in combat against the Blood Horde. We're jumping out to meet them.
Forward hull breach. That'll mean decompression injuries in the nearest compartments beyond the breach.
For all we know, Wraith won't make it until we arrive.
What happened?
We got hauled in as casualties. We're on the DSR.
We're going to be discovered soon. We don't fit in with these...
slaves.
Careful. We still have to do it.
In my sleep, pack leader.
Hey, Serrano, you hear about the mysterious intruders?
Intruders?
Don't move. We don't like Serranos, but we do recognize your value as a hostage. For now.
The Wraith crew members who came aboard as casualties from the forward compartments have not appeared for ID checks. I understand that Lieutenant Sweeza had a notion that they might be Blood Horde intruders.
We need to get our combat experienced people over to T3 and T4. There's got to be another way to get through this.
If we can't go inside, how about outside?
Trouble. They're maneuvering. Lieutenant, I don't suppose you know whether the FTL drive is irretrievably broken.
The FTL drive.
It should be interesting.
Got a plan yet?
A two-part plan. Get control of this ship and defeat whatever's waiting for us.
For which we need warships.
If only we could Trojan horse them, the way they did to us.
It can't be done.
Do you really think our people can't figure out the controls on Blood Horde ships? I think they can. I think they will.
Prelim scan, 6. Say again, 6 Blood Horde ships.
We did it! We got ourselves a warship!
Let's get this ship going. Weapons, range in, Captain. Go ahead.
Serrano Legacy, Book 4, Once a Hero, Part 2, from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Tom Simpson, Daniel Gavigan, Terrence Acil Ford, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Baker, Michael Glenn, Christopher Grayville, Richard Rowan, Jason Stiles, Tony Nam, James Lewis, Jonathan Watkins, Kate Foster, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Mort Shelby, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Replogle, Nanette Savard, M.B. Van Dorn, and Colleen Delaney. The Last Gunfighter, Number 8, The Burning.
Frank poured himself a cup of coffee and put the pot back on the coals at the edge of the campfire. He broke a stale biscuit in half and pitched a piece to Wolf, who caught it and devoured it with a satisfied look before Frank could even put it in his mouth, much less chew it. After a moment's quiet contemplation of the almost full moon and starlit sky, Frank lay back with his head on his saddle and the campfire behind him. He pulled a dog-eared paperback book from his saddlebag. Frank had picked the book up in the last town he'd passed through, giving only a nickel for it instead of a dime since it was used. Frank noticed the author's name on the cover, just above a drawing of what appeared to be a rather nasty character holding a screaming woman in one arm while he fired a very large pistol with the other. The author's name was listed as Ned Buntline, but Frank had met the man on more than one occasion and knew his real name to be Edward Z.C. Judson, though in truth he had no idea what either the Z or the C stood for. Judson had offered Frank Morgan what most people would consider an enormous amount of money if he'd tell the writer about some of his many adventures. Frank told Judson that not only was he not interested in cooperating with the story of his life, but that he would consider it a personal insult should Judson try to write it on his own. Frank held the book up so he could get a better look at the woman on the cover. She had long hair, cascading down onto her shoulders, from under a hat with a wildflower sticking up out of it. He wondered briefly if this was to be another tale of Deadwood Dick and Hurricane Nell, or whether this issue would feature Calamity Jane or Buffalo Bill. Frank was acquainted with both Bill Cody and Calamity Jane, and got a real laugh out of the way the pair were portrayed by Judson. Buffalo Bill was described as tall and lean, handsome without being pretty, and deadly with a six-shooter. In truth, Bill Cody was just above average in height, ugly as a polecat beneath his large handlebar mustache, and though a pretty fair shot with a long gun, couldn't hit the side of a barn from inside with a pistol. Frank knew Judson had also taken a great deal of literary license with his description of Calamity Jane, whom he described as petite and pretty and a deadly shootist. While it was true Jane could shoot the balls off a gnat at 50 feet, she was as plain and ugly as homemade soap. Though Frank thought her funny and entertaining after she'd had a few drinks of whiskey. One thing was sure, he thought as he looked at the cover of the dime book. She looked nothing like the woman on the cover, and Jane would shoot the toes off any man who tried to grab hold of her like the bearded gent had in the picture. Frank drained the last of his coffee, checked to make sure Wolf was bedded down next to the fire, and lay back to read a few pages until he fell asleep. He opened the book to the first page and the title of the first story, Dangerous Dan Murdoch Bites Off More Than He Can Chew. Dangerous Dan Murdoch was a new character. Frank hoped that maybe this one wouldn't be so bad after all. And he began to read. Dangerous Dan Murdoch drank whiskey after whiskey as he sat at the bar in Wichita, Kansas, one Saturday afternoon. The more he drank, the angrier he became. Dangerous Dan didn't have anything in particular to be angry at. It was just that whiskey always made him a little crazy. A man sitting down the bar a ways got up off his bar stool and moved toward Dan, a lopsided grin on his face. Dangerous Dan didn't like seeing the man grinning at him like a school kid. He pulled his Colt 44 and slashed it across the man's face. The man was on the floor, blood spurting all over Dangerous Dan's boots. This infuriated Dangerous Dan even more. And so he commenced to kicking the man in the head. The bartender rushed out from behind the bar, grabbed Dangerous Dan by the shoulders, and pulled him away from the man on the floor.
Why in the hell did you do that?
That fool was laughing at me.
He wasn't laughing at you. He was just coming down the bar to get one of those pickled eggs in the jar there next to where you're sitting.
Oh.
You're gonna have to leave the bar.
That's all right. I was getting tired of this place anyway.
Stepping out onto the boardwalk, running along the main street of Wichita, Dangerous Dan bumped into a young lady who was walking by with her arms full of packages. Dangerous Dan noticed the woman was extremely pretty. In fact, he thought her the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen.
Hey, honey, what's your name?
The young lady covered her mouth with her hand. Ladies just did not speak to gentlemen until they'd been formally introduced. She refused to speak to him. Dangerous Dan grabbed her by the arm, jerking her around until their faces were just inches apart.
I asked you what your name was, little lady, and I expect an answer.
I'm called Sweet Sue.
Dangerous Dan pulled her up against him, his thick black beard almost touching her ruby red lips.
Well, Sweet Sue, how's about a little kiss for old Dan?
Sweet Sue stared at Dangerous Dan's blackened and stained teeth, and the thought of touching those hideous lips caused her to try and pull away. Unhand that lady, you blackguard. Dangerous Dan couldn't believe his ears. No one dared talk to him in that tone of voice, not if they wanted to go on breathing. He whirled around, still holding Sweet Sue up against his thick body. He dropped his hand next to the butt of his .44 and scowled at the stranger who'd just spoken. The man was tall and lean, with wide shoulders and narrow hips. He was dressed in buckskins and had shiny black boots on that reached up to his knees. He was wearing a brace of pearl-handled Colt peacemakers, and he was scowling right back at Dangerous Dan.
This ain't none of your business, stranger. So why don't you just mosey on down the road and you won't get hurt?
I told you to let the lady go, or I won't be responsible for what I'm forced to do to you.
Who are you, mister?
My name is Frank Morgan. And if you don't let go of that young lady right this minute, I'm going to have to make you. Dan squared around until he was facing the man named Frank Morgan, and he shifted Sweet Sue from his right arm to his left, so his right would be free to draw his Colt and kill this insolent man.
Well then, Mr. Morgan, fill your hand!
Dangerous Dan grabbed for his gun.
Oh my goodness!
When the smoke cleared, Frank Morgan was leading Sweet Sue off toward her buckboard, and Dangerous Dan was down on one knee on the boardwalk, holding his right hand under his left arm.
I won't forget this, Morgan. You and me ain't done yet!
Frank closed the book. That damned Judson had used his name after he told him not to. He wondered briefly if the people back east who read this nonsense really believed the people out west talked and acted this way.
God, I hope not. Bad enough that the school kids out here read it and believe that the life of a gunfighter is glamorous and exciting.
Frank put the book aside as he pulled his blanket up over him, wishing he could somehow get Judson or the other widely read author of the Penny Dreadfuls, Erastus Beadle, to just once write how it really was to make a living by using your gun. If they did, and if people could be made to believe it, there would be a damn sight fewer gunfighters in the future, for a fact. He rolled on his side and closed his eyes. Frank rose with the sun, and dawn was going to come awfully early. Frank first smelled the odor of charred wood, then the smell of burned human flesh.
There's no mistaking that particular odor.
It was coming from the north, right over the next little ridge. Just to be on the safe side, Frank shucked his rifle from the saddle boot and levered around into the .44-40.
Might be Indians.
It was always better to err on the side of caution. He topped the ridge and looked down at the charred ruins of a homestead and several dead livestock. He could not immediately spot any corpses, but the smell told him there were some down there. He dismissed the thought of Indians.
They would have stolen the horses, driven off the cattle for food, not shot the animals and left the carcasses to rot on the ground.
On the ridge, Frank took a long, careful look around him at the carefully tended fields that formed a crude half-circle around the ruins of the homestead. He could see nothing moving and, more importantly, could sense nothing. Frank rode down to what had been the small front yard of the homestead. He could tell the picket fence had been torn down by several mounted men. He looked down at Wolf, his big cur dog. Wolf didn't like the smell, but he was not baring his teeth or growling, and the hair on his back was not standing up. Frank swung down from the saddle and led his horse over to a watering trough. Then he walked all around the house, still carrying his rifle. There was no sign of any life. He wasn't expecting to find any. He looked up at a wagon coming up the road. The wagon was followed by a couple of men on horseback. Frank waited in the front yard. He could see a man and a woman on the wagon seat. The man brought the wagon to a halt in front of the house. The two mounted men sat in their saddles and stared at Frank.
I just rode in from the south, over that ridge yonder. Smelled the odor of charred wood and death. Decided to investigate.
You say?
That's right, mister. I say.
The man holding the reins of the wagon team smiled.
Any sign of life?
I haven't found any yet.
Well, this was Dick and Abby Norton's place. They had two boys, Hubert and Charles.
No sign of them. But I just got here. I've only had time to walk once around the ruins.
Why are you carrying a rifle?
Because I didn't know what to expect. And I still don't know about this. Only that it wasn't Indians and it happened hours ago.
Sometime during the night, for sure. I'm Claude Hornsby. This is my wife, Mavis. And the other two are Dan and Hugh.
Frank.
Just Frank?
It'll do for the time being.
Let's look for the bodies.
Claude stepped down from the wagon. Hugh and Dan dismounted as well.
Well, maybe they're not dead.
We're dead, Hugh. Just like the others.
Others?
It's a long story.
As if he don't know it.
Frank looked at the man and held his temper in check. There definitely was more to this story than he knew. He waited for someone to explain. Claude helped Mavis down from the wagon seat.
Thank you, Claude. Mr. Frank, we're farmers in the middle of cattle country.
And the cattlemen want you out of here.
Yes, sir.
I should have guessed it. Same old story. Seen it before.
You were a tied-down pistol. The gunmen the big spreads in this area have hired all wear tied-down guns.
No one's hired me to do anything, Claude. I don't hire my gun.
But you are a gunman.
Yeah, I've been called that. Yeah.
I don't see anything funny about it.
I assure you, friend, there isn't. Dan, you know the names of any of these hired guns?
Two or three drift in every day, Frank. I've heard the names Paco and Jess mentioned.
Paco Morales and Jess Stone.
You know them?
I know them. They're bad ones. Top gun handlers. I know they don't like each other.
Do they like you?
No, Hugh. They'd like to kill me.
Why is that, Mr. Frank?
Call it professional jealousy.
Well, then you must be famous.
I'm known some here and there. You want to look for your friends in the rubble? I think it's cool enough.
You'd help us?
Sure, why not?
They found the bodies of the man and his wife in the house, in the area that Dan said was once their bedroom. The bodies of the boys were found in the ruins of the barn.
Somebody better ride in and notify the sheriff.
The farmers only looked at Frank.
Did I say something out of line?
Notifying the sheriff would be a waste of time. He's solid on the side of the big ranchers. Besides, he just say the fire was nothing but an accident.
There's a bullet hole in the woman's head.
Oh, that don't make no difference. He'd say some ammunition in the house exploded and done it.
I'll go tell the Kalins. Ask them to spread the word. We'll have the burying in the morning.
Someone has to tell Paul about this.
You're right, Mavis. But I'm not looking forward to that.
The group was silent for a moment.
Is there a town nearby?
There's a no-name town that's pretty much owned by the two big ranchers in this area. There's rooms for let over the saloon, right down that road, about 8 miles.
Frank looked at the blanket-covered bodies.
Want some help burying these people?
Why would you volunteer? You don't have no stake in none of this.
No reason. Just being friendly in a time of need.
We appreciate it, Mr. Frank, but we can make do. As soon as we get the word out, there'll be folks aplenty. We'll have the burying in the morning.
All right. I'll just wash up a bit, be on my way. I wish you people the best of luck.
Frank turned to walk over to his horse for a bar of strong soap, then hesitated and turned around to face the group.
I heard a saying once that fits this situation.
What's that, Frank?
It's D-L-T-B-G-Y-D.
Well, that don't spell nothing. What's all that mean?
Don't let the bastards get you down.
The men smiled and Mavis blushed.
What's your last name, Frank?
Morgan.
Frank got his soap, then walked to the trough, while the men stood in shock, speechless.
Frank Morgan?
Yeah.
The Frank Morgan?
I reckon so. I don't know but one, and that's me.
Frank stepped back into the saddle and lifted the reins.
You folks take it easy. See ya.
He rode off in the direction of the no-name settlement, Wolf loping along beside his horse. As he rode, Frank could understand why there was a fight over the land. The land was lush, the earth rich, suitable for both farming and grazing of cattle. The road Frank traveled toward town led through a series of beautiful valleys, and there were several more lush valleys behind him, east of the recently burned homestead. The valleys were long and wide, with snow-capped mountains to the north, green rolling hills to the south. In the valleys ran several creeks and a small river. It was a beautiful place, to be sure, certainly worth fighting over. It was mostly unspoiled by civilization, with no telegraph wires that Frank could spot. Frank had made it to the small settlement by mid-afternoon. He stabled his horses at the livery, and Wolf immediately settled into the stall with Stormy, Frank's big Appaloosa. Frank made certain Wolf had a bucket of water just inside the stall. The man at the livery put a wary eye on the big cur.
Does that dog bite?
He's been known to bite. But he won't if you leave him alone.
I'll damn sure do that.
No cafe in this town?
No. Tell the truth, it ain't much of a town. But they serve food at the saloon, and got rooms there too. You look familiar. You been through here before?
No.
Looking for work, are you?
Nope.
Oh, too bad. There's plenty of work to be had. I just figured you was looking to hire your gun.
Gun handlers in demand around here, eh?
You bet. GP Spread is hiring, as is the Diamond Ranch. Top wages, I hear.
Just passing through. Just looking for a bed and a meal.
You watch yourself in the saloon, mister. There's a lot of randy old boys in town.
Trouble hunters, huh?
You bet.
I'll be careful. Take care of my horses, will you?
Like it was my own. And I'll fight shy of that damn dog, too.
Frank walked from the livery over to the saloon and hotel. He got a room. The clerk didn't even look up after Frank had signed his name. The room wasn't much, but the bed looked comfortable enough and the sheets were clean. He washed up as best he could in the hand basin. Then Frank left the room and walked down into the saloon section of the building. A dozen or so men were idling away their time, most of them seated at tables. Two were standing at the bar. Even though he did not recognize any of them, he could tell all of them were hard cases. They gave Frank a long once-over as he walked to the bar.
Beer, please.
Yes, sir.
The man closest to Frank smiled.
Just getting into town?
Just got here.
Pulled in at the right time, for sure. The GP and the Diamond are hiring. Paying good wages, too.
Thanks. Fighting wages?
You bet. The best.
Two spreads fighting each other?
No. Sodbusters are moving in. Taking all the good land. You gotta get rid of them. Must have ridden in from afar not to know that.
New Mexico.
That's afar, all right, for a fact. Say, you want me to put in a good word for you?
I think I'll pass on this one. But thanks just the same.
That might be wise of you. There's some bad old boys hiring on.
Oh?
Yeah. Jess Stone and Paco Morales is here. They don't get no badder than them two. Lesson Frank Morgan was to ride in. That would be something.
Yeah, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Frank cut his eyes to a man standing at the far end of the long bar. The man was dressed all in black and wearing two guns, slung low and tied down.
Who's that one?
The man followed Frank's eyes.
That's Rod Harley. He's nearabouts as bad as them two I mentioned. That feller standing next to him is Bob Campbell. You heard of him?
Yeah, he's from down around El Paso.
Mm-hmm, that's him for a fact. I don't know the third man standing there. All I ever heard him called was Steve.
Could be Steve Nesbitt. Came out of Missouri after shooting a man in the back over a woman.
Might be, I reckon. Say, you got a name?
Frank.
I'm Dave Moore.
Pleasure.
Dave took a second look at Frank, and Frank saw his right hand tighten around the handle on his mug of beer.
Frank Morgan?
Yeah.
Dear God. And you're not buying into this fight?
No, I'm just passing through.
Does anyone around here know you're in town?
Some farmers. I helped him look for bodies, searching through the ashes of a homestead that was burned out last night.
I hadn't heard about that. Did you find any bodies?
Four. Man and his wife and their two sons.
Damn! I knew there might be some killing, but not women and kids.
Range wars are dirty business, Dave. If both sides would just sit down and talk, maybe each side give a little, they could usually be avoided. That don't happen often.
Mm-hmm. I reckon it don't. That damn sure ain't gonna happen this time, neither.
After seeing what was left of the Norton place, I tend to agree with you.
Dick Norton?
Yeah.
I knowed them. They was nice folks. Damn.
Sort of changes things around in your mind, huh?
Damn sure does. I just don't hold with killing women and kids.
Nobody decent does, Dave.
Never heard it put just like that, Frank.
There aren't but two kinds of people in this world, Dave. Decent people and indecent people.
There ain't no in-between.
Not in my mind.
I reckon not.
So you gonna stick around and get hired on?
I think I'll stick around. But as far as getting hired, I gotta give that some more thought.
I thought you would.
Did you now?
Yeah. I think deep down, you might be a decent person. Say, you had supper?
Not yet.
I'm hungry. Want to join me for a bite? I'm buying.
Nice of you. Yeah, I'm kind of hungry myself.
Frank finished his beer and stepped away from the bar. As he did, a man stood from a table across the room.
Morgan!
Frank turned to face the man.
Yeah, I thought that was you, Morgan. I've been studying you since you come in the saloon. You remember me?
Can't say as I do.
George Cummins, Drifter. Now you remember me?
Nope.
Down on the strip about 10 years back, you pistol whipped me.
Oh yeah, I recall now. You were beating that Indian woman. I stopped you.
She was my woman, Drifter. I owned her. I had a right to do anything I wanted to with her.
Slavery officially ended back in 65, George. Remember? Remember that conflict called the War Between the States?
That wasn't about squaws, Drifter.
Is there a point to this conversation, George?
Yeah. Yeah, the point is I'm gonna kill you, Drifter.
Doubtful, George. Real doubtful.
I owe you a bullet, Drifter, and I'm gonna give it to you right now.
Then make your play, George. You're keeping me from my supper.
I don't like to be made light of, Drifter.
Beside him, Dave eased away a few feet, out of the line of fire, he hoped.
Did you hear me, Drifter?
I'm not deaf, George. You're gonna drag iron or talk me to death?
Frank turned his back to the man and signaled for the barkeep to bring him another beer.
Don't you turn your ass on me!
Frank ignored him.
What's going on in here?
Nothing, Jim.
Dave leaned back toward Frank.
The foreman out of the GP, Jim Knight. He's a bad one.
What are you all puffed up about, George?
Nothing, Jim. Nothing at all.
That's Frank Morgan standing at the bar, Jim.
So, you're the living legend, huh?
I'm Frank Morgan. I wouldn't know about the living legend.
Frank set the beer mug on the bar, then turned his head to look at Jim Knight. He was a bear of a man, about Frank's height, barrel-chested with plenty of hard-packed muscle under his shirt. Frank figured him to be between 40 and 45, somewhere close to Frank's age.
Something you want? Or are you just gonna stand there and stare at me?
Oh. You got a mouth on you, don't you, Morgan?
I asked a question, if that's what you mean.
Did you come in here looking for work, Morgan?
My gun is not for hire. Not now, not ever. Now go away and leave me alone.
Mister, I think you need a lesson in manners.
And you think you're the man to teach me?
I sure do. Keep pushing me and you'll find out.
You haven't been pushed yet, Knight.
The foreman gazed into Frank's eyes for just a few seconds. He saw something there that made him want to back up. Jim Knight was not a coward. There was not a streak of yellow in him. But he was an experienced man, a man of the West.
Just passing through this area, Morgan?
Just passing through. But in the short time I've been here, I haven't liked what I've seen.
Oh? What is it that you've seen?
A farmer and his family burned to death.
What? What family? What are you talking about?
The Norton homestead was burned out last night. Man and his wife and two kids were killed.
No G.P. Hand had anything to do with that. I want the sodbusters off of grazing land, yeah. But we haven't killed anyone.
Somebody ordered it.
Knight signaled the barkeep for a drink. A bottle and a glass were placed in front of him. He stood for a moment, staring down at the amber liquid before bringing it to his mouth.
We had no hand in any killing, Morgan. Not that it makes a damn to me whether you believe me or not.
I'm just passing through, Knight. I'll be gone in the morning. Fight your battles your way and live with your conscience.
The foreman poured another whiskey.
My conscience don't bother me at all, Morgan. It's clear as a cold winter morning.
Glad to hear, Knight. Now then, is there anything else you wanted to talk to me about?
You're hiring your gun, Morgan, because that's what you are. Did the diamond bring you in?
Nobody brought me in, Knight. I told you my gun's not for hire. Put that out of your mind.
I don't believe you.
I don't give a damn what you believe, Knight, this time. Just don't call me a liar again.
The foreman shoved the whiskey bottle away from him and turned to face the crowded saloon.
Did you and George have a beef?
He did. I didn't.
He's good with a shotgun, Morgan.
So am I, Knight. So am I.
The foreman shoved the whiskey bottle away from him and turned to face the crowded saloon.
All GP hand! Let's go! Back to the ranch, right now!
No one argued, and the saloon quickly cleared. Only a few men remained seated at tables. Frank glanced over at Dave.
Now we can have supper.
Frank stepped out of the Saloon Cum Hotel just after dawn and had walked down to the livery with a sack of scraps for Wolf. The cook was a person who liked dogs, and he'd been more than generous. Frank filled Wolf's water bucket and fed the big cur. The liveryman showed up just as he was about to leave.
Care for some coffee?
I sure would.
Well, they'll be ready in a few.
Sure is pretty country.
It'd be a lot prettier if folks could get along. I understand a Norton family will be buried this afternoon.
I hadn't heard.
Grave diggers working as we speak.
The man pointed out the window to a hill just outside of town.
Right up yonder.
Didn't see a church in town.
Farmer's got a lay preacher amongst them. Preacher Wright. He'll be handling things.
Is this the first time anyone's been killed over land?
No. Sorry to say there's been others. Nothing this bad, though. Probably be more.
Farmers aren't giving up, huh?
Nope. And I don't blame them. They filed on this land legal and worked it up. They built homes, and by God, they're going to stay or die trying.
Sounds like you're on their side.
I ain't on anybody's side, Mr. Morgan. Just like you say you are. I'm in the middle.
Sometimes that's a dangerous position.
So I've been told. Coffee should be ready.
The two men sat in the livery office, chatting over coffee and cigarettes.
I'm John Platt, Mr. Morgan. Been here for years. I come here with Mark Rogers as a cowhand. He owns a diamond spread. A couple of years later, Grant Perkins showed up and claimed the rest of the land as his own. He's an arrogant bastard. But then, so is Rogers. They get along.
Money and power. Same old story.
Yeah, I reckon. If Rogers and Perkins would just pull in their horns a mite, there'd be land aplenty for all. But on the other side of matters, Paul Adams, the leader of the Sodbusters, is no sweetheart himself.
Oh? How so?
Him and his sons control about 4,000 acres of prime land, and got a couple of creeks and a river running through it. GP spread on one side of the river, diamond spread on the other. You can figure out the rest.
I sure can.
The liveryman refilled both their mugs.
And to make matters worser, I seen four wagons filled with sodbusters rattle through here late yesterday, just at dusk.
I heard the wagons from my room. I didn't look out to see what they were.
Farmers, with a whole passel of tow-headed youngins.
More kids to get hurt.
Sure enough. And they will get hurt, count on it. Rogers and Perkins is uncorking the bottle now. I may be old, but I still got eyes and ears.
I seen more gun slicks ride in last night. Rick Handy was amongst them.
Handy? I thought he retired.
I reckon he come out of retirement. Besides, he's too young for that. You and him's about the same age, I reckon.
Just about. Last time I saw him was in, Kansas. And it was a land dispute there, too.
You and him had a run-in?
No, nothing like that. At least not yet. I hope we never do.
But you seen him work?
Oh, yeah. That was years ago, though. In Nebraska. And that was about land, too.
He's fast, ain't he?
Very quick.
Better than you?
I don't know. I hope never to have to find out.
You pulling out today, Mr. Morgan?
I don't know. I should. You have any idea who Rick is working for?
Not yet. Won't take long to find out, though. They'll all be riding in today for drinks and cards. Might not be too healthy for you to stick around.
I'm used to that feeling, John.
Yeah, I reckon you are. So, you gonna stay?
Yeah. Yeah, John, I think I am.
Then you're siding with the farmers?
I'm not siding with any faction. Not yet. I think I'll wait and see how the ranchers want to play this.
You know already, Morgan.
Yeah, I guess I do, John.
Frank set his mug down on the office desk.
I'm gonna get some breakfast. Wanna join me?
No. My old woman fixed me flapjacks and fatback about an hour ago. But thanks for the invite. And don't worry about your animals. I'll take good care of them.
Frank had his breakfast at the saloon. Bacon and biscuits and gravy. He leaned back and rolled a smoke. He glanced at the wall clock. It was 7 o'clock. Frank looked up and waited. The bat wings were pushed open, and Rick Handy walked in, two tough-looking hard cases with him.
Now it gets interesting.
Rick Handy pulled up short when he spotted Frank sitting alone at a back table. His face tightened, and his hands balled into fists for just a few seconds. Then he regained control and forced himself to relax.
Hello, Ricky.
Frank smiled, knowing how the man hated to be called that.
The name is Rick, Drifter. Don't call me Ricky.
Excuse me, Ricky. I didn't realize you were so sensitive about your name.
I said, don't call me that.
Sorry, I forgot. You know how us old folks get, Ricky. We all develop CRC.
What the hell is CRC?
Can't remember crap.
Very funny, Drifter.
That's a good one, Morgan. I gotta remember that one.
Yeah, you do that, barkeep. I heard you was in the area, Drifter. I also heard you wasn't gonna stay.
I changed my mind, Ricky.
One of the men with Handy stepped forward.
So this is the famous Frank Morgan. He don't look like much to me.
Which spread are you working for?
The Diamond. If it's any business of yours, which it isn't.
I'm a curious sort, Ricky.
Frank carefully poured another cup of coffee with his left hand. His right hand was out of sight, near the butt of his peacemaker.
You keep calling me names I don't like, and you're gonna be a hurt, curious sort.
Ah, now, Ricky. You wouldn't want to spoil a beautiful morning with gunplay, would you?
Let me take him, Ricky.
What's your name?
I'm Zach Spence.
Don't let your butt overload your mouth, Zach.
By God, I ain't afraid of you.
You shut your mouth, Zach. I was having a conversation with Ricky.
I'm warning you, Morgan. I'll...
Then it dawned on him what Frank was doing. The flush left his face, and he calmed himself.
It won't work, Drifter, but you came close.
What won't work, Ricky? Just having a little chat with you.
You know what you were doing, Drifter? Trying to rile me so I'd make a mistake. Forget it. Come on, boys. Let's have us some coffee and breakfast.
Frank stood on the boardwalk in front of the saloon for a few moments, watching the activity at the general store, located directly across the street. A wagon had pulled up in front, a man and woman on the wagon seat, several kids in the bed. A few minutes passed, then another wagon pulled up, then a third. Claude and Mavis Hornsby and their kids, two boys and a girl, were in the third wagon. Frank waited and watched, standing in the shadows of the awning. Soon, four more wagons rolled up, followed by five mounted men, all armed, sidearms and pistols.
Paul Adams and his sons.
The barkeep watched from just inside the bat wings.
Sam, Al, Jimmy, and Mark.
They handle those weapons like they know how to use them.
Yeah, they do. Paul Adams come out of the war a Yankee colonel. Lots of medals. His wife died about 10 years ago, so I'm told. He come out here about 4 years ago and filed on some prime land. He was the first sodbuster in this area. And the others started coming in. Been trouble ever since. Adams has killed several cowboys from both spreads.
I think I'll visit the store. Give me some tobacco.
Good luck, Morgan.
Frank walked across the wide and rutted street. He touched the brim of his hat when Mavis Hornsby cut her eyes to him.
Morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Mr. Morgan.
Howdy, Claude.
Morgan?
You know that gunslinger, Claude?
That's the man I told you about, Paul. Frank Morgan.
Frank stepped up on the boardwalk and entered the good-smelling general store. Frank always enjoyed the smell of a general store. Tobacco and bread and pickles in a barrel and candy and leather and dozens of other smells. He walked up to the counter man.
3 sacks of tobacco and some papers, please.
The clerk put his purchases on the counter and looked at Frank for a few seconds.
You really Frank Morgan?
Yeah. And you are?
Joe Wallace. I own this establishment. Me and my wife, Theta.
Glad to meet you. I was told the two big spreads in this area own the town.
They used to. Dave Kitchens bought the saloon a couple years ago. I bought this store last year. John Platt bought the livery about the same time. Be even more business is coming in if this land mess ever gets settled. You hiring your gun, Frank Morgan?
Paul Adams stepped into the store, followed by his sons and several other men and women.
My gun isn't for hire, Joe. Not now, not ever. I might step into a fight every now and then, but if or when I do, it'll be because I believe in one side or the other, not for money.
How very noble of you, Morgan. A gunfighter with principles. I wasn't aware there was such a thing.
Frank turned to look at Paul, his pale eyes turning chilly.
There are probably quite a number of things in this world that you're not aware of, whoever in hell you are.
I'm Paul Adams, Morgan, and you'll watch your arrogant tongue when addressing me.
I'll say what I please to whoever I please, and whenever I please.
One of Paul's sons stepped forward.
That's my father you're addressing, sir.
That's your problem.
Frank picked up his tobacco and papers, pushed past Paul Adams and his sons, and walked out of the store.
The man is impudent.
Frank ignored the words. He stood on the short elevated boardwalk and rolled a cigarette. It was only from that height that he noticed the caskets in the bed of the wagons. The Norton family.
Here comes Preacher Wright.
Well, let's get on up to the burying ground.
The man lifted the reins to his team. Frank stepped to one side, out of the way, as the crowd left the general store and got into the wagons for the ride up to the community's graveyard. Paul Adams paused for a moment on the boardwalk to look at Frank.
You are not welcome in this community.
I can't begin to tell you how upset that makes me.
Stay off my land.
With pleasure.
Paul Adams and his sons mounted up and led the procession up the hill. Joe Wallace stepped out of his store to stand beside Frank on the boardwalk.
It's a very trying time for the farmers. The Norton family were nice people.
I'm sure they were.
The farmers have a right to work the land.
You'll get no argument about that from me.
I won't?
Not at all. There's room for everyone in these valleys. But there has to be some give and take on both sides for it to work.
That's not gonna happen, Mr. Morgan.
It better happen, or there'll be more killing.
Conversation ceased as both men looked up the street. 4 men were riding into the small settlement. Frank knew one of them.
Reggie Carlson on the bay.
Gunfighter?
One of the best.
You know the others?
No, but Reggie wouldn't ride with anyone who couldn't pull his weight in a fight. Do you have any idea how many gun hands the two spreads have hired?
40 or 50 at least.
And how many farmers in the valleys?
15 or 20. They come and go, Mr. Morgan.
Yeah, like the Nortons, some go forever.
Frank sat on a bench in front of the general store, watching the funeral services wrap up from afar. Counting the young kids, Frank figured about 50 people were in attendance. and there were 20 or so hired guns hanging around in the saloon. Frank hoped the farmers and their families would just go on home after the services and not stop at the store for supplies or conversation. Frank was still sitting on the bench when the first farmer's wagon rolled up and stopped in front of the store. Then a second and third rolled up and stopped. Soon there was a long line of wagons.
Here we go.
Frank rolled another cigarette and waited for the action to start. The farm families began crowding into the store, and the hired guns began gathering on the boardwalk across the street.
You people are making a big mistake, Claude.
We need supplies. That's the long and the short of it, Mr. Morgan.
Frank did not immediately reply to that. He watched as several hired guns began walking across the street. Paul Adams and his sons levered rounds into their Winchesters. The hired guns stopped in the middle of the street and tensed, their hands hovering close to their guns.
Don't do anything stupid, Adams. You got women and children in the line of fire. Think about that.
Adams cut his eyes to Frank for a moment, then minutely nodded his head.
Put your rifles up, boys. This is not the time for gunplay.
The sons eased the hammers down on their Winchesters and booted them.
We came here to get supplies, people. Let's get what we need and go home.
The moment of tension passed. The gunslicks slowly turned and walked back to the saloon. Paul dismounted and walked over to where Frank was sitting on the bench.
I really don't know how to figure you, Morgan, but I thank you for that moment of wisdom on your part.
I just don't like to see women and kids get hurt, Adams.
The leader of the farmers nodded his head curtly and walked into the store. Frank continued to sit on the bench. He looked across the wide street. Rick Handy stood alone on the boardwalk in front of the saloon, staring at Frank. Claude Hornsby stepped out of the store to stand by the bench.
You two know each other?
We've met a few times.
I don't think that man likes you very much.
You could say that.
You gonna stay in this area for a while, Mr. Morgan?
I think I will, Claude.
Why?
That's a good question. This affair is really none of my business.
It's a matter of right and wrong, Mr. Morgan.
And there is right and wrong on both sides. Or perhaps you don't agree with that.
There's more right on our side than wrong.
That's probably true.
Rick Handy stepped off the boardwalk into the wide street. Frank stood up.
What's going on here?
Get all the women and kids out of the way.
Is there going to be a gunfight?
Probably. Do what I tell you, Claude.
The farmer moved swiftly.
Everyone inside, quick now.
The gunslicks in the saloon suddenly crowded out onto the boardwalk, quickly moving left and right of the bat wings out of the line of fire. Obviously, Rick had made his brags in the saloon after Frank had left, and now the hired guns wanted to see if his words were just that, words and nothing more.
I'm damn tired of always hearing about how fast you are, Morgan. By God, now you get to prove it.
I'd rather not, Handy.
Are you yeller?
You know better than that, Rick.
Then step out here in the street.
All right.
Frank stepped down from the boardwalk.
I'm here, Rick. Now what?
Rick Handy's hand hovered near the butt of his gun.
Make your play, Morgan.
It's your show, Rick. It's up to you.
Now!
Rick grabbed for his pistol, but Frank timed his draw perfectly.
Ah!
His bullet hit Rick's right thumb between the first and second knuckle, breaking the thumb and slamming Rick's pistol out of his hand. Rick looked down at what was left of his thumb. It wasn't much.
You ruined me! I'll never be able to hold a short gun again! Why didn't you just kill me?
Because I didn't want to kill you, Ricky.
Rider's coming in.
It's Mark Rogers. He's got some of his hired guns with him.
The owner of the Diamond Spread reined up in the middle of the street.
What the hell's going on here?
Frank looked at the men who rode in with the rancher. He knew one of them, Matt Kingston. Matt met Frank's eyes and nodded his head in recognition. Rogers turned his attention to the farmer.
Are you starting trouble again, Paul?
No, he isn't. Your hired gun braced me.
Who the hell are you?
That's Frank Morgan.
Rogers slowly twisted in the saddle, settling his gaze fully on Frank.
Well, well. The sodbusters went out and hired themselves a real wolf, eh?
Nobody hired me. I was passing through this area and needed supplies and a hot meal. Nothing more than that.
You say.
That's right. I damn sure do say. And if you have something else to say about it, get your big fat ass out of that saddle and say it to my face. Don't sit up there like some two-bit potentate hiding behind your hired guns.
Rogers blinked a couple of times at that. He was not accustomed to people speaking to him in such a manner.
You got a damn smart mouth on you, Morgan.
Let me take care of him, Mr. Rogers.
Shut up, sonny. Or this is full of tin horns like you that Frank Morgan has chewed up and spat out.
Matt looked at Frank.
How you doing, Drifter?
Fair to middling, Matt. Haven't seen you in quite a while.
I'm bleeding, and I'm hurt. Ain't anybody gonna see about me?
Nobody gives a damn about you, Rick. Pour some whiskey on what's left of your hand and shut up.
There ain't no way to talk to a friend.
Who said we were friends, Rick?
Matt looked at Mark Rogers.
If Frank Morgan says his gun ain't for hire, boss, it ain't for hire.
All right. See that you don't tarry in this area, Morgan.
Rogers, I'll stay around here as long as I damn well choose to stay. And if you don't like it, you can go sit on a cactus.
Again, Rogers blinked at Frank's words. A flush began creeping slowly over the man's neck and face. His hired guns tensed in their saddles, their hands dropping near their guns.
When your boys draw, Rogers, I'll kill you first.
Hold it, boys. Just take it easy. I'll say this, Morgan, and you'd better pay heed to my words. Don't ever cross Diamond Range.
Frank stared at the man and said nothing.
Get your horse, Rick. We'll fix you up back at the ranch.
Frank watched Rogers and his crew ride out of town. Then he stood on the boardwalk and calmly rolled a cigarette. John Platt, along with the farmers and their families, stood in silent awe looking at Frank.
I never seen a man chuck a pistol out of leather that fast in my life.
I never heard anyone speak to Mark Rogers like that.
You made an enemy for sure, Mr. Morgan, and he won't forget neither.
Frank looked back at Dan Jones, standing near Claude and Hugh Watson.
Man needs to be taken down a peg or two. Is the owner of the other big spread as bad as Rogers?
Worse.
I thought Rick Handy was slick with a short gun, but he just barely cleared leather before you shot him, Frank. And you let him hook and draw first. I swear, I ain't never seen nothing like that.
What happens now?
I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm gonna get me a cup of coffee.
Frank ambled toward the saloon, which was now almost deserted. He stopped by the bar.
One cup of coffee.
The bartender sneered, until the other man behind the bar sidled over to whisper something in his ear.
That's the man who blew Rick Handy's finger plumb off.
The barman smiled sickly.
I'll be glad to bring it on over to your table, Mr. Morgan. And will there be anything else I can get you?
Frank shook his head and moved over to a corner table where he could sit with his back to a wall and face the front entrance. When he sat down, he noticed a tattered booklet lying on an empty chair against the wall next to his seat. He leaned over and picked it up, smiling when he recognized the same paperback book that he'd started a few days ago but never finished. The barman set his coffee on the table along with a bowl of sugar and a small pitcher of fresh cream.
Thanks.
Frank then opened the book and thumbed through the pages until he came to the place where he'd stopped reading.
Dangerous Dan Murdoch was on his knees, hollering at Frank Morgan and Sweet Sue that he would get them for what they'd done to him.
Frank leaned back his head. The other night, when he'd first read how the fictional Frank Morgan had shot the gun out of the desperado's hand, he thought how stupid that was. Everyone who'd ever been in a gunfight knew that in real life, you never tried to shoot a man's gun hand. The target was just too small. You always aimed at the biggest, thickest part of your target, the chest. That way, if you happened to be a little high or low or off to one side, with any luck, you'd still down the man before he could do the same to you. Frank shook his head and smirked. Funny how real life had imitated the fictional one in the book. Here he was, just out of a gunfight in which he'd actually been stupid enough to do exactly what Ned Buntline had his hero doing in The Penny Dreadful, shooting a gun out of the hand of a man who was doing his level best to kill him. Of course, he had had a damn good reason for not killing Handy. If he'd blown a hole in him the size of a fist, 10 other of his cronies would have drawn and shot him down before he could blink. As it was, his only chance of coming out of that little fracas alive was to do exactly what he did, shoot Handy, but leave him standing. He sipped his coffee and read the next few pages of Dangerous Dan's story. After Frank Morgan and Sweet Sue left, Dangerous Dan Murdoch got to his feet and went to the doctor's office down the street. After a brief examination, the doctor declared that miraculously no bones were broken, and other than probably having some swelling and bruising over the next few days, Dangerous Dan was none the worse for what had happened to him. Dangerous Dan had returned to the saloon, intending to drown his sorrows in more whiskey, but he noticed that the other patrons were looking at him and smiling, and he was sure they would be laughing behind his back from now on because of what that bastard Morgan had done to him. He grabbed his hat and started for the street. He flexed his right hand as he walked, noting how stiff and sore it was. He realized it'd be days or weeks before it was well enough for him to even think about going up against Frank Morgan again, at least with a shotgun. As he walked past the nicest restaurant in town, he glanced in the window and saw Frank Morgan and Sweet Sue sitting at a table, all cozy-like, having a meal and laughing together. Dangerous Dan was sure they were laughing at him, and it made him furious.
I'll get that son of a gun.
He stalked off toward the gunsmith's shop on the next corner. He went directly to a shelf on a far wall and took down a 10-gauge express gun, a double-barreled shotgun with the barrels cut down short so the shot would spread more rapidly. It was a devastating weapon at close range, and it didn't take a great deal of skill to hit just about anything within 30 yards. Dangerous Dan placed the shotgun on the counter.
Give me a box of double-aught buckshot. I got me a varmint I gotta kill.
That buckshot's an awfully heavy load for shooting varmints, mister.
This is a right big varmint.
As soon as he was outside the store, Dangerous Dan broke open the box of shells, put one in each of the twin barrels of the sawed-off shotgun, and filled his pockets with the remaining shells. He walked toward the restaurant with the gun cradled in his arms, smiling to himself at the mental image of Frank Morgan shredded and torn apart by the buckshot. Frank Morgan and Sweet Sue sat in the restaurant, Frank drinking coffee while the young woman drank tea.
Mr. Morgan, I want to thank you once again for saving me from that ruffian.
Any gentleman worth his salt would have done the same thing.
But you were the gentleman who saved me, Mr. Morgan. And I will never forget you for your act of bravery as long as I live.
Frank nodded and happened to glance out the window of the restaurant just in time to see Dangerous Dan Murdoch leveling a double-barreled shotgun at them from just outside the building. Without having time to utter a warning, Frank shoved Sweet Sue as hard as he could, and then he dived under the table. Frank came up on his knees, his right hand full of iron. Frank's first bullet hit Dangerous Dan in the middle of his chest and made him stagger back, but didn't knock the big man off his feet. Dan's eyes opened wide under the shock of the slug in his chest, but he was still strong enough to raise the barrel and take aim at Frank, who was kneeling a mere 10 feet away. Frank knew if Dan fired again, he couldn't miss at this range. He eared back the hammer on his Colt 44, aiming higher this time. A small black hole appeared in the middle of Dangerous Dan's forehead. Frank turned quickly to see how Sweet Sue was, and was relieved to see that she was getting to her feet, apparently unharmed by the load of buckshot that had torn their table apart.
Miss Sue, are you all right?
Yes, I think so, Mr. Morgan. But sir, did you have to be so rough?
But Miss Sue, Dangerous Dan was going to shoot us through the window.
She glanced outside and saw the bloody body of Dangerous Dan lying on his back.
That still does not excuse rudeness, sir. Good day to you.
She didn't look back as she walked stiffly out the door and down the street. Frank tipped his hat back and shook his head.
Well, I'll be hanged.
He realized that he would never understand women if he lived to be 100 years old. The real Frank Morgan closed the book with a grin. Well, at least Judson had gotten one thing right. People hardly ever appreciate it when you stick your nose in where it doesn't belong, no matter how much of a favor you do them. It was springtime, time for roundups and branding. Cowboys drifted into the area looking for work. But there would be no roundup or branding this spring, and the only hands being hired were gun hands. The drifting cowboys drifted on, looking for a friendlier climate. No lawman came to investigate the killing of the Norton family. Frank wasn't sure it had even been reported. Considering the way the farmers felt about the sheriff, he doubted it had been. The diamond hands and the GP hands stayed out of the settlement, and Frank stayed close, not at all certain just why he was doing so. He had taken an intense dislike for Mark Rogers, to be sure, but there was more to it than that. Sure, it could have been injustice, but there was injustice everywhere, from settlers to the treatment of the Indians. No, there was more to it than that. Frank just hadn't pegged it down yet in his mind.